Bonjour, moi je vais rapidement présenter Statcraft et la motivation pour laquelle nous sommes ici. Et puis je laisserai la parole à mon collègue qui est plus spécialiste que moi des problématiques du saumon atlantique. Donc Statcraft, c'est le premier producteur d'énergie renouvelable en Europe et c'est également le premier hydroélectricien en Norvège. À ce titre-là, nous sommes une entreprise donc à actionnariat unique, puisque l'actionnaire est l'État norvégien. Donc c'est une entreprise publique. Statcraft a ouvert un bureau en France, à Lyon, en août 2009, dans le cadre du renouvellement des concessions hydroélectriques annoncées par le gouvernement à l'époque. Et donc moi, j'ai rejoint l'équipe France Statcraft en janvier 2010 en tant que responsable environnement. Et une de mes missions, donc, dans ce cadre-là, était d'identifier les principaux enjeux environnementaux autour des concessions françaises. Et très rapidement, le saumon atlantique s'est imposé comme un des enjeux très importants, notamment donc dans le bassin Adour-Garonne, et puis également sur la Dordogne. Donc je me suis tout naturellement tournée vers mes collègues norvégiens, qui, vous le savez, donc le saumon atlantique est quand même l'emblème de la Norvège. Donc moi, n'étant pas spécialiste, je suis allée vers eux. Et donc j'ai mis à profit donc les 4 années, presque 4 ans maintenant, pour mieux comprendre comment était géré le saumon atlantique en Norvège. Et ce qui m'a le plus marqué, c'est la différence de gouvernance de la gestion des cours d'eau en fait entre la France et la Norvège, et c'est la raison pour laquelle j'ai sollicité quand j'ai eu connaissance de ce colloque, donc l'association SOS Loire Vivante, que je remercie d'avoir accepté donc notre participation, parce qu'il m'a semblé intéressant de pouvoir montrer les différences qu'il peut y avoir de gouvernance. Et puis donc aujourd'hui nous allons intervenir en tant que gestionnaire de cours d'eau. Pourquoi ? Parce qu'en Norvège, donc, l'exploitant hydroélectrique se voit confier donc, par concession, comme en France, hein, une mission de service public de production d'électricité. Et par la même occasion, on a également une mission de protection de l'environnement et de gestion des cours d'eau. Donc on est directement impliqué dans ces activités de gestion. Et donc aujourd'hui, pour faire un parallèle, si vous voulez, Statcraft a une partie de ses activités qui pourrait correspondre pour partie aux activités des associations migrateurs en France et également pour partie aux activités de l'ONEMA. Donc c'est un petit peu difficile à comprendre en France, mais en tout cas en Norvège c'est comme ça que ça fonctionne, d'où la responsabilisation donc de l'exploitant et d'où le fait aussi qu'on investit énormément dans les problématiques environnementales, dans les projets de recherche et développement et notamment sur la problématique du saumon atlantique. Donc voilà, je vais laisser la parole à mon collègue qui va vous en dire un peu plus sur ces aspects de gestion. Et bien sûr, nous sommes à votre disposition par la suite pour toutes questions. Merci.
Okay, can everyone hear me? I think we are getting late in the afternoon. Maybe it's better to stand here or the other one. Doesn't matter for me. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you for being here. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's really interesting to hear about your challenges in France and looking in an international perspective. My name is Morten Stickler. I have 2 roles in Statcraft today. I'm working in the corporate staff on trying to make the direction of what kind of environmental policy we should have in the company. And on the other hand, I'm coordinating the R&D work in Statcraft. And together, I think it's very exciting because you can be on the ground, understand your real challenges, and at the same time try to make a good direction of the company, and not on the pink elephant. As Sylvie mentioned, we are a rather big company. We are distributed all around the world, but of course the Atlantic salmon issues is gathered up in Europe. So I'm going to skip more commercial about Statcraft and start to talk about salmon. I used to work as a researcher before starting in Statcraft. My particular theme was winter work, so I stayed in Canada in a small hut for a year and watching 147 salmon and looking at what they were doing the whole winter and in the summertime. An exciting time with some bears and some other animals, but it was quite interesting. One thing I learned from this journey was that, and through my PhD, was that all rivers are different, and you have to treat them also in the same way. You cannot say that all the stream systems are equal. You have to go into and understand each of the rivers. And I think that's a very valid point to make, and I think that the philosophers, they actually understood it long time before we started to regulate the streams. So that is a valid point. And it's also a valid point when it comes to setting environmental flow, because I know that some countries are using fixed flows, some countries are using variable flows, and you should, whatever you decide, you should always ask the question, what is the challenge and your problem in this particular stream? I think that is very important. So there's no one base flow that is working for all streams, I think. I would like to give you a very short overview of what the status is in Norway. We have an independent group of people in Norway that every year makes reports about what the main challenges are, what the status of the Atlantic salmon stocks are looking like. So I'm just extracting some of the details from this report. We have seen an increased number of multi-sea winter salmon the last couple of years. It's a positive sign, but on the same time, we see that the total return of salmon is 50% compared to 1983. It's not a very happy situation, so there's a need to definitely continue the work we're doing and to really dig into some of the core challenges. We see that we have an increased population in the southwest, south and southwest of Norway, which has been mentioned already by previous presenters. And that is one key for that is, of course, the acidification from the 70s is now declining, so that's a good thing. We see there's an increase, but on the same time, we have to ensure that we have a proper gene pool in some of those streams. I think that we have learned something from Mandal in South River, for example, that they used a number of different genes, and now today we have a good population, but it's a population of different gene pools, I think. So that is also an issue. We see that industrial and recreational fishing is not a significant threat, except for Tana. Mr. Ode, he mentioned that in his speech, and it's a very serious matter in Finnmark that we have to deal with. That is not my job, and I'm happy about that, but it's a political question that it needs to be dealt with. What we do see is that we have two most important threats against Atlantic salmon stock today, and that is escape from fish farms and sea lice. And that is also what we see in the western coast of Norway, which has a rapid decline in both salmon and sea trout. So actually some of the streams that we are dealing with, we are transporting fish out through the fjords to get past the fish farms for the smolts. And that has been also quite successful, actually. I would like to draw your attention about how we think a little bit about our mindsets. I think that one of the previous speakers, he talked a little bit about management and plant management, and I think it's very important to have a holistic view of what you're doing. You have to think of the whole life cycle. For Statkraft and our company, of course, we are dealing with the riverside and the freshwater systems. But you have to consider the spawning areas, the eggs, the alevin, the fries part, the whole cycle. It's not only one problem, but it's a complexity of different challenges. What I mean by adaptive management is that you also have to learn about what you're doing. In a company like Statkraft, we have mandatory regulations when it comes to, for example, restocking or restriction related to up and down ramping of water level, etc., etc. But the key question is, does it work? And I think that is a fair question to ask, and that's what I mean by adaptive management. We have to put objectives, but we have to learn from what we're doing. That is very important. But on the same time, we also have to include people people have different mindsets, people are different, we have to get them together. We need to understand each other, and we need to have the same basis, the same baseline when we are discussing. So I would like to stress the adaptive management issue in this regard. As mentioned by Sylvia, we have done, and we still do, quite a lot of restocking. It was started in 1986, which of course was a good idea because we had a rapidly declining Atlantic salmon stocks, and Norway has a particular responsibility in order to preserve the North Atlantic stocks. We have 2 gene banks, we have 8 hatcheries, 2 of those are in Sweden, so we are quite a big player. But on the same time, is it really working? Is it worth the investment? Is it increasing the self recruitment of the Atlantic salmon stocks? And what we experience is that we only have maybe 0.5% of returning rate of the fish that we are releasing as live fish. And that is then it's natural to ask, how can we improve that? And that is very important. It also says 1%, that's because we can say that in average we have 50% of catch success when we are dealing with these numbers. But it's a very low number. So what we are starting now is that we are establishing a new internal program that just asking the question, is it working? So we have to go through all our release of fish, specifically the live fish, and see if it is working, or can we do something else, or how can we improve it. At the same time, we also would like to do more egg stocking. I think it was talked about adaptation here. I think also using egg stocking is probably maybe a better idea, personally. What we see from some of the release of live fish is that they're just standing where they were released. And that doesn't help the river stock. Okay. From a hydropower company perspective, it's natural to ask how much water is needed. That is the key question, because we need to release some water. It's always an economical question: what does it cost? What do we lose? It's very negative to use the word term "lose" because it should be implicit from the very beginning, part of the frames, and not as a loss of money. But anyway, it's more better. Is it? Maybe it looks like this. Maybe it's some kind of carrying capacity. Maybe you're actually making something worse if you're releasing too much water. Or too little, of course, which is the normal situation with regulated streams. But it's a fair question to ask. What we are aiming at now today is we are more looking into what are the needs of the salmon in the different life stages. So the holistic view is important. We have to look at the egg survival, we have to look at the smolt migration, also maintaining the geomorphology in terms of sedimentation and silted area, fry displacement, it needs something to eat when it hatches, it needs a good habitat. We also need to attract spawners to get up the stream. And of course, we need to get them out of the stream as well. Even though there's a mortality when it also the salmon goes out. But it's important to look at this as a total, not as a one. I go straight to some of the key challenges that we have in Norway. We don't have time to go into all the challenges because there are a number of challenges. Absolutely. But some of the recent research we have done in Norway is done through a research center called CEDREN. Maybe some of you know about it. It's a big research center, and we are putting it's about 40 million euros, I think, in total of 6-7 years. I'm part of the board, and it's very exciting work that we do there. But there are two key challenges that we have looked at is migration barrier and loss of connectivity, and spawning success and growth of juveniles. You need to get the fish up, you need to get fish down, and you need to have success of your spawners, and you need to actually ensure that the juveniles are growing. It's not magic, but this is what you need. And these are two pictures that is maybe what you normally would relate to hydropower, big dam and dry areas. And we acknowledge that this is the problem. So the first case I would like to draw your attention to is just a small case. You probably don't know the river at all. You probably have heard about Alta, Tana, Mandal and other rivers, but this is a different small stream, so I just want to draw your attention to. In the 70s in Norway, we built a number of weirs for aesthetic and recreational reasons. It was a good idea because people wanted to do kayaking, they wanted to maybe do some swimming there. But for the salmon, it was a disaster. And if you combine that with regulation, it definitely doesn't help the situation at all. So you have still water and low flow velocity, sedimentation. You even have pikes, that pike population started to grow, feeding on the juveniles of Atlantic salmon, and you ended up with a very small limited population. And it's a small flow in this stream, and you can see on the picture there that this is the winter conditions, but you have a weir that is definitely not helping the salmon to go upstream. Even though we have a ladder there, it will have problems finding it. So some of the solutions that we looked at, that was part of this work when I worked as a researcher. We did some hydraulic modeling and asked the question, how would it look like if we removed some of these weirs? How would the hydraulics look like, and how would the
is that included in this talk as well?
Anyway, we asked, how can we remove the bear? So we remove the bear, and it's not magic. Of course, it helps. But what the good thing is that we had biological monitoring in a number of years before and a number of years afterwards, so we can show the results of how the results are. And here you can see, removing the bears on your left side and some of the results on the right side, without touching the flow at all, actually. And here you can see a result of the spawning success. The big circle assigns spawning before we have removed the weirs. And then we have the number of nests and reds afterwards when you have removed the weirs. So you see all the spots. It's definitely, it is working. No magic. We also see that the densities of the juveniles are increasing rapidly. It's actually just a few weeks after we removed the weirs in the summertime, the salmon started to ascend up to these areas, started spawning. So it's an immediate action. Few words about spawning success and growth of juveniles. We have a small other stream in the western part of Norway, Bjurajo, very beautiful, big waterfall, lots of tourists coming to see this waterfall. Statskog has an obligation to release a number of cubics. And the problem is that when releasing this mandatory, we are releasing cold water. So what happens? Well, it happens that you are actually affecting the growth of the juveniles, and that is a negative effect the population. So we had to do something about that. Temperature is a crucial factor. We also had a high level of escaped farm salmon that really doesn't help the situation. Here you can see that salmon spawns in the autumn, and then the water disappears. And you get the dry and freezing of the eggs. So I'm going to skip this one and go straight to this one. And what we did, we just asked the question, how much water do we need? Instead of saying that one fixed flow. So we tested a number of different scenarios. These are the small discharges, but still the principle is valid. So we used a number of years to test how much water is really needed to ensure that we don't strand any spawning areas. You can see that the percentage on the left axis. So by going up to two cubics in this stream, very small, you have a quite fair amount of success of the spawn areas. We also found another very interesting discovery, and that is that the correlation between distribution of the spawning areas compared to the distribution of the density of juveniles. So if you want to do any kind of restoration in your streams, you should definitely map all your spawning areas, have a good holistic view on it, and then look at the distribution of the and the density of the juveniles. How can we improve your river? Not only two or three areas, but actually look at the holistic view. That is very, very important. How many minutes do I have left? Two?
Five.
Still five?
That's my need.
Thank you very much. What we also did, we modeled the water temperature effect on the growth. So what we actually did, we figured out that if we replace 40% of the cold water by using different intakes in the same system, we had a very positive effect on the Atlantic salmon stock. You can see that some of the densities of surplus is increasing at the end of the year from 1999 to 2008. It's not a very high number, but it's increasing, so it's going in the right direction. You can also see on the left, on the right side here, that the temperature difference is not very big. But if you're calculating the degree day factor, accumulating all the differences throughout the year before the eggs are hatching, you will have a significant effect on the water temperature. And mentioned by the earlier presenter here was that if you have an earlier hatch of the eggs and an earlier fry, you will also have a benefit when it comes to growth and survival for the next winter. So by only small modification of the flow, it is possible to actually make some significant changes that is positive for the salmon. But it takes a lot of time. It's very, very important to have some data up front and some data afterwards to really test your hypothesis, and not only put some actions into action, so to speak. There has been done so much research, so many different actions, without actually evaluating those actions. We need to do that. So future, how does the future look like? And I think that the future salmon is difficult to tell, but what I do know is that if you start to communicate as a human being, you might end up having a positive outcome, I think. So what we have done now in Norway and in Statkraft, together with the researchers, as a cross-disciplinary approach, we have said it's good to have scientific papers, but we need to address all the science that we know today together in one book, and try to look at what have we learned, what are the good stories, what are the good solutions when it comes to environmental design. Sometimes you have to make decisions, sometimes it's not optimum, but you have to make some decisions at a certain time. Then it's very important to sit together, have the same basis, the same knowledge basis, and use that as a starting point. Then you will have good solutions. This book here is unfortunately only in Norwegian today. It was released just a few weeks ago. But the focus is Atlantic salmon, and it's up-to-date knowledge on hydropower Atlantic salmon, how to have good environmental design. Two main parts, diagnosis and solutions, and it's a multidisciplinary linking biology and hydrology. So I think this is a good way to embrace people from the management, people from the industry, and the research together. And then finally, my last slide, I think the future is the young people. I think that's very important to emphasize. I know there was a lot of young people here earlier today. I really hope that they get the interest in Atlantic salmon. One thing that I have been working quite a lot with the recent year is a network called NOPAS. I founded it in 2004, and the objective is very simple: bring people together, young professionals, all from all around the world, sit down and discuss what are the solutions, what are the research, what are the last findings, and how can we collaborate in future. I think that is very important. We were in France for 2 years ago. We have been in Scotland, England, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, not yet in Canada, but we are discussing it, and we are going to have a 10-year anniversary in 2 years. And we used only 210,000 euros, not much,
But we have had 9 global meetings. We have 230 young professionals in the network today working with the Atlantic salmon and trout. We have 19 countries included, 35 of the best people knowledgeable about the salmon included. We also have produced about 1,000 peer-reviewed papers. So I would say this is a big knowledge base, and it is a good thing for the future. So if you have any young people that you would recommend take part in this, I would strongly advise you to go to the homepage and try to sign up. Next meeting will be in Sweden next year, and then 2014, a 10-year anniversary. So please contact me if there are any questions about this. And Statkraft is, of course, is a central contributor to this, and also Indra, another French, also actually included in this. That's good. Thank you very much for your attention.